Wednesday, December 1st, episode 136 of The Hezzy, brought to you by BasketballGods.net. A little bit of a rough night for us Warrior fans here. I'm not even going to front to you. I took an extra hour of sleep because I went to bed an extra hour late. You know, just the adrenaline and all that. But I'm not mad. I'm not salty about it. You know, Warriors come out. I thought the interesting strategic move to start the game was putting Draymond on Chris Paul. And I get the train of thought behind that. One, his length and know-how, right, to avoid fouls, perhaps change some of the passing angles for Chris Paul because, again, he's not used to a player that big on him. And then the concept of now they can switch the eight and pick and rolls, and all of a sudden you have Draymond on him. But the problem was then you have Looney on Chris Paul. DeAndre Ayton, let's face it, he was the X factor. He showed up last night. Phoenix knew that was their advantage, and they didn't hide it. They went right to it immediately, old school style. And you just, I think the most glaring thing that stood out to me in that game was the gap in athleticism with their front court to our front court. Some of it's age, right? And just overall, and we knew size could potentially be an issue. Jordan Poole kind of bailed us out to start, right? And that's the thing about JP. You like his mental makeup for big games. Say what you want. He's sporadic. There's certain things. He's kind of a weird kid, right? But weird in a good way. But you knew it even back to his Michigan days. He is the type of player that embraces the big moment. He showed up in the play-in game against the Lakers, right? And so it wasn't surprising for me to see him go off, also given the matchups. I did a pregame live of this thing on my Patreon yesterday evening, and I thought Poole might be the X factor when you looked at all the cross matches, right? And so Poole goes off, and I think that that's a huge silver lining that we can take from this game, is that I think Poole is going to tend to show up in these big moments. Again, because of his mental makeup, he wants these moments. A lot of these players, all the players say they do, but Jordan Poole, nah. He likes the big stage, the big games. Now, Devin Booker, when was it? Late in that first quarter, early second quarter, hard drive, coast to coast. He comes up gimpy on that left hamstring. And if you haven't paid attention, Book has had hamstring issues throughout his career. I know people point to Chris Paul, who has as well. And I've seen Devin Booker hurt the hamstring on that same type of drive multiple times. Why people aren't maybe as aware of it is because it's happened. When the Suns were so bad, it didn't really matter. There was times where Devin missed huge chunks of time because of hamstring pulls. But again, the Suns were in the basement, so it wasn't really on Front Street league-wide. Someone was asking, is it playing style? Is it the way he plays? No, you know, I'm someone who has tight hamstrings as well. And a lot of the time, it's your anatomy. Like, you just, the way you're built, your hamstrings are tighter. If he has an anterior pelvic tilt, which means a lot of athletes have where they're a little bit tilted forward. So then what that does is it lengthens the hamstring. So it could just be anatomy. I don't really think Booker is a reckless player or anything like that, but it's something that, again, has nagged him. So he goes out, that loses some of the steam of the matchup, right? Now, all of a sudden, I felt like the pressure had flipped because initially going into the game, I thought, yo, this is the pressure's on the Suns. They're at home. They're trying to set the franchise record for wins. And as you know, as special as their run was a year ago and how good they've been, look, let's face it, the Warriors have more clout, right? And the Warriors can kind of sit back and rest on their accolades. I felt like last night's game was more important to the Suns. But when Devin Booker went out, it was all of a sudden like, all right, well, now Warriors should probably win this, right? Problem was Andrew Wiggins wasn't Andrew Wiggins, at least not the Andrew Wiggins we've seen this year. And that's kind of a tough situation because biggest game of the season, right? So it looks weak if he doesn't play. He's going to catch flack if he doesn't play. But at the same time, he clearly wasn't right. He clearly wasn't right. So it was a damned if you do, a damned if you don't situation for Wiggs. I understood why he played. We'll see if he plays Friday. Maybe with Booker out, now they feel like they've got to rest Wiggins. Because we've got to keep the big picture in mind. Both these teams have to. I don't know the severity of Devin Booker's hamstring. If this was a playoff game, he might have still played. But again, we're not even 20 games into the season. So both sides have to keep the big picture in mind. You know, what I was disappointed in was Draymond has been so aggressive this year downhill and putting pressure on defenses and shooting the shots that he needs to take. Not even shots, finishing at the rim when he needs to, really is what it is. And all of a sudden, last night, Draymond kind of turned back into the last 2 years where he was just, he lost his aggression. There was a scoop layup that he had that he smoked somewhere, I think, in the third quarter. And if you go and you watch it, I'll show it in the breakdown today for sure. His eyes were on the weak side corner the whole time. And then at the last second, he tried to scoop and flip it and he smoked it because he didn't have that mindset of putting pressure on the rim. Now, maybe we should credit the length of the Suns' DeAndre Ayton. As nice as he was offensively initially in the game, his biggest impact was rim protection. And I think you saw that affect all our guys, maybe outside of Gary Payton, who it doesn't matter who's in there, right? But Juan T was in there. And look, man, Juan, if Juan, I know that we can talk about the turnovers, and you got to credit the Suns' defense for a lot of that. But my biggest gripe with Juan was you have to shoot the open threes. When you're playing an elite defense, you can't pass up open shots. And I saw him do that several times. And, a lot of people were complaining that Chioza played a lot. But here's the thing. The thing that I noticed was Chioza wasn't fazed by the stage, you know? And it looked like Juan kind of was fazed by the stage last night. Now, the beauty in this is we get to see it again Friday. I don't think it'll be as big of a stage. It won't matter as much, but role players tend to play better at home, and our role players didn't play well. A lot of Chioza, a lot of Bielitsa. Otto Porter, there's another silver lining, right? Because clearly he's ready for the big stage. And that's in part a lot of the – I'm not going to go too deep into it. Again, we'll have the breakdown. What else do I want to say about this right now? Because I know y'all wanted my thoughts on this. Okay, Steph, we got to talk about it. Worst shooting night of his career when he shot, over 20 shots. I saw a thread on Twitter, Warriors World. My guy was like, well, he got his shots. He got his normal shots. He just missed them, right? You can say that in this instance. Steph is, out of any shooter in the world, how much cachet has Steph earned? Like, Steph could go cold for a month. He's still fucking Steph Curry, right? Like, he can have off nights. But Mikal Bridges, his length was closing the windows. We saw it in Charlotte with McDaniels. McDaniels got bothered Steph. That lanky, super thin frame where they're able to get through screens, but then the length and agility to close out just these little windows. And Steph needs the smallest of windows to shoot, but those windows were shrunk. So, yeah, Steph missed some open shots. He did. He couldn't get a rhythm, but we have to give Mikal Bridges credit for closing that window and not allowing that rhythm, because I think what happens is he was so attached and his closeout ability is so from so far that Steph was kind of hearing footsteps. You usually hear that term in football with a quarterback, right? I thought Steph was hearing footsteps. So you got to credit Mikal Bridges, and that's the biggest takeaway, right? You know, Steph's in the middle of what looks like his third MVP campaign. The Suns, is this going to become a new rival? This looks like the two power teams in the Western Conference. If Mikal Bridges can slow down and contain Steph Curry in a potential playoff matchup, what is there to say about that, right? That is the huge advantage Suns, right? Then you have to favor the Suns in this matchup moving forward. But now, again, the beauty of this, we see this team three times in December, Friday night again. And so we've got to see a bigger sample size. Let's see how the Warriors counter and how Steph, as you expect him to probably explode at Chase Center on Friday night in that same matchup. I thought the mistake strategically, we've seen this time and time again with Steve Kerr, where they should have just went to a traditional pick and roll. They were flashing Ayton high, sometimes switching. Then wear Ayton out up top. Go to the pick and roll. There was too much off-ball stuff. I thought Bridges, that's where he shined. And I know he's a good ISO on-ball defender as well. But again, I think that when Steph's having trouble scoring off the ball, it's very simple. It's elementary. Put him on the ball. And we didn't see that enough last night. And that's a kind of a gripe with Kerr, right? That's a thing that happens, Warrior fans, that drives Warriors fans crazy. Again, check out the full breakdown of this later on my Patreon. Support your boy. Let's move around the league here. Monday night, It was a battle of the balls in Chicago. Even old ball was courtside. But they got in foul trouble, right? The refs. I don't even talk about the refs. I think what stood out to me watching Alex Caruso play with this Bulls team, he's even more effective offensively than he was for the Lakers because there's more movement. The ball hops around, so he doesn't really have to create his own, right? He knows how to attack off of the playmaking of the three stars. And so offensively, he's even more efficient and effective. I haven't checked the numbers, but that's what it looks like to me. But really, the teams are very similar. Charlotte and Chicago, but I think Chicago's just a more talented version than Charlotte. And then the X factor was Vooch, right? The X factor was Vooch. Now, Charlotte countered with P.J. Washington at the small ball five. And in that first half, he lit him up. He countered him. He hit like five threes or something. And they were all butt naked. They weren't coming out on him. You know what I'm saying? So they have that ability to go small. But Vucevic played big, and it was his best offensive outing as a Bull this season, right? He punished them, and he was the X factor. He was the X factor. I've brought it up a couple times. I think Charlotte needs another big. What's this kid from? Was he from Carolina? Nick Robertson or something? He's a legit 7-footer, but he's not skilled enough. And then we know who Plumlee is. And so these kind of marquee matchups with these teams, these measuring stick games here, because that was one for Charlotte, like last night was for Golden State and Phoenix. It teaches you about what you maybe need to fill in. And again, Charlotte needs another big. I'm racking my brain here. Could they possibly get Nurkic on the low if Portland decides to blow things up? I guess we know they're not going to blow things up. So, but yeah, Nurkic maybe could be had cheap. And then I was looking around the league. You know who would be perfect for this Hornets team is Jakob Poeltl. Jakob Poeltl, very underrated player. Rim protector, tough pick and roll partner for LaMelo. But that would cost them probably P.J. Washington and James Bouknight, who has he got a minute yet? But yeah, something to consider. The Bulls handle Charlotte Monday night. How about this Michael Porter Jr. news, man? It's whack. I remember when it happened, Bill Simmons was really complaining about the extension, right? It was $180 million extension. And hold on here. My dog is snoring on me. Hey, Jordan Bell.
Hey, pup.
So he was complaining about the extension when it initially happened. And if you follow me, you know I'm a Porter Jr. believer. I believe in him. I think he has the juice, the skill set. It's coming along. It's not there yet as far as being a true star. But I thought this might be the year for him. And so now they give him this max contract, and now it's announced that he's having back surgery again. If you recall, that's why he slid to them in the draft, right? No one wanted, he was flagged by a lot of medical staffs that he just wasn't going to be able to play, man. And so not a lot of detail has been revealed about it, but man, it's just spooky. It's just scary, right? This is not even, you'd almost rather have an ACL or something like that, right? Back surgery is it's much more unknown, right? And then you're dealing with a 7-footer, and this is his second or perhaps his third. I don't even know, man. So the reality of it is that there is a chance that Porter Jr. just isn't the same player, and you've just maxed him. And that totally kind of just like ruins this window right here. But I will say this, though. There are silver linings for Denver here because, one, you could argue they draft better than any team in the league, right? They got this Bones Highland kid this year, but every year they find somebody in the draft. So maybe that can make up for it. And then two, you look at Jokic in his prime here at 26 years old, he can probably play like this for another 10 years, right? It's not like he's going to lose a step. He is what he is. He's going to play like this until he's 40 with that size and skill. And so as crazy as it sounds, you could legit tear it down and just rebuild around him right now. His window isn't small. They can totally rebuild around him if they need to. But again, the Porter Jr. thing, that's just terrible news. So hopefully it's a full recovery for him. More news on the injury front. Jalen Suggs is out with, I believe, a fractured thumb. A couple of y'all had added me on Twitter when the news broke because you know that was what I talked about coming out of Gonzaga and watching him was that football mentality, right? And I mean, Pat Beverly, Marcus Smart, same mentalities, right? How many games a year do they play? How many games do those guys play? 60, if you're lucky, right? And I get it. It's very tough to turn off because that is probably, even I'm talking about Jalen Suggs now, that's one of the best parts of his game. To him, he views that as a skill set. His motor, his physicality, his toughness, the football mentality, right? That's his badge, if you will, for 2K. And it's kind of one of those things where it's all or nothing, I'm assuming. I'm going to keep it real. I'm a shooter, man. I don't play like that. I make business decisions out there. But it's an all or nothing type mentality. So it's very hard to say, hey, you got to kind of pick and choose when to play that way. It's almost impossible to ask a guy to do that. I will point to Draymond Green, who is one of the few that can, right? If you look at Draymond, like, he has a football and player's mentality out there, but he also protects himself at times. He kind of chooses, he protects himself better. So it is possible, but whenever it's always a worse injury when it's a rookie who needs that experience. So that sucks for Orlando, but it's not like they were going to do anything this year. I think there's still a lot to be excited about there when you look at what Cole Anthony's doing and how good Franz Wagner looks. And hey, Mo Bamba looks like an NBA player as well. So I'm watching Ant-Man go off against the Pacers. Well, he didn't go off, but when I turned it on, he had a steal and a big dunk, and then he had another steal and a lob dunk. And the one thing that I noticed, now, maybe I'm spoiled by the Warriors' chemistry and the Warriors' bench and all the antics they do and the celebrations, but boy, the Wolves, they sure don't really get that hyped when Edwards makes a big spectacular play. And maybe they're just used to it. Maybe it's just so routine. They're like, oh, there's Ant with another windmill in half court again. You know what I mean? So maybe it's that, but I don't know. They don't seem to get too hyped for him. But I'm watching this game, man. Karl Anthony Towns, and he had a big night. He had like 32 and 13, but he eventually fouled out. He is the biggest whiner in the league by a country mile. It's ridiculous. They need to put him in check here. I've heard executives and people on podcasts say that they've babied Towns too much in Minnesota. And they're absolutely right, dude, because every offensive possession, he's whining and complaining to the refs. And then when he finishes the play, he's screaming and beating his chest and scowling and using all this emotion, vocally and physically, right? But then he waddles himself back down court on defense and acts like he's too exhausted to make the right rotations or just play the proper defense. So which way is it? Like, are you using too much energy, Towns, on offense with your whining and complaining to defend properly? It's a huge problem. And I know Minnesota's playing better and I don't want to rain on their parade. They beat the Pacers on the back of some crazy blocks from Josh Okogie. But that's something that it's a huge thing that needs to be fixed. Towns, it appears like he kind of has a gas tank issue, right? But he also kind of emotionally can't contain himself. And I think his emotions wear himself out. I just got done talking about Draymond. Pat Beverly, one of his teammates, he's one of those guys that can talk all game and he doesn't get tired. Towns, I think you got to save your energy, buddy. Stop whining. You're an all-star center, yeah, but you've got to refocus when you come back down on the defensive end. He's so focused on the call he didn't get or the screaming and whining on the offensive end, he's a terrible defender. I think that's a huge part of it. But yeah, back to the end of the game, Josh Okogie had a game-winning block. It looked like when you let the little kids come out on the playground with the big kids and they all play basketball. The dude, he got beat around the free throw line and he jumped from behind, turned and blocked the shot, which essentially put it away. And he had several of these blocks in the fourth quarter where he let the dude turn the corner and cut across the paint. And then he just trailed from behind. He basically had chase down blocks in the half court. It was kind of wild. Now, he was clanking them in the corner. But after I saw the defensive plays, I was like, all right, I get why he's out there. Damn, right? Houston Rockets have won 3 in a row without Jalen Green. And that's not here to throw shade at Jalen. Look, he's struggling. Like, you look at these rookie shooting splits. They're down bad right now. And so I think as a whole that they're struggling. So I'm not here to shit on Jalen Green, but I mean, when you replace him with a healthy Eric Gordon, yeah, your team's going to be better right now for sure. Now Houston, after winning 3 in a row here, they're talking about letting John Wall play. I don't know if it's perhaps to increase his trade value, or I think that perhaps they're just pivoting a little bit, realizing like, look, that's fine that you're going to tank into the top of the lottery. You can't be so bad that you're not competitive night in and night out, because then you can't hold these young players accountable. You've got too many young guys that need to be held accountable. It's not fair to anybody. And so, yeah, I think that they should pivot and let Wall play. It's not like letting Wall play is going to push them into the play-in game. And then you remember the lottery odds have been flattened out. So we'll see how that goes. Another team that's trying to kind of right the ship, the New Orleans Pelicans. Brandon Ingram has returned. They've gotten healthier. That helps. Josh Hart, Ingram has returned. You saw Big Valanciunas in Los Angeles Monday night. What'd he have? 39-15? I went back and I looked at his field goals. 7 threes. He had like 4 of them in the first quarter, where initially Zubat just wasn't coming out. They were like daring him. And I get it, man. I mean, the percentages are that he can make them, but it kind of, you know, his shot kind of reminds me of his big Aaron Bane. When Bane started hitting the 3 a couple years ago, where he kind of throws that leg ahead when it doesn't look right, but it's going in, man. And by the time he got hot, it was too late for the Clippers. The other thing that I thought hurt the Clippers, he did damage in the paint too, is it was that switching defense by the Clippers. He was shooting over the top of the switches. He was rolling to the paint and pinning the smaller guys. So Valanciunas is becoming a monster, man. Now Zion has been cleared for solid foods. New Orleans, I think their only choice is to hope that they win and try to right this. And in a season's past, I think that they would have dug themselves too deep a hole. But that's the beauty of the play-in system now, right? So I think that they're going to try to climb up into that area. This is the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. I'm out, y'all.